wants wine.
For you ladies, I assume two giant buckets of wine?
Red, please.
Half red, half white.
Oh, you need more Chardonnay. And better Chardonnay.
Wine in the morning on the weekends.
Let's all think about it, people.
Think about what?
Morning drinking. For it.
That tickles!
Jump, jump, jump.
Good evening, brothers and sisters, and welcome to another edition of Homebrew Talk, your monthly internet radio podcast that unlocks the mysteries of Zymergy and spreads the homebrew gospel one carboy at a time. Homebrew Talk is brought to you by the good people at Grow Radio, and we are recording the show live at the Grow Radio studios. Check out the many interesting programs in convenient podcast format at growradio.org. Homebrew Talk is also brought to you by Your Hogtown Brewers, a merry band of beer enthusiasts with a homebrewing problem. Check out all we have going on at hogtownbrewers.org. Good evening. My name is John. I am the founder and brewer at First Magnitude Brewing Company here in Gainesville. And with me, as always, is my homebrew jockey partner, Ron. Ron and I are both members of the Hogtown Brewers, have been making beer, mead, and cider at home for many, many years. And we are both BJCP certified homebrew judges. Hello, Ron.
Hello, John.
Ron, you know, this show has been going on 4+ years, right?
Sure.
You know, and it's always beer, 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 mead, cider occasionally. You know, can't we talk about something else?
Good idea. And so on that note, I say, John, we offer this podcast to Dionysus, the god of wine, who apparently is a very busy god, as he's also the god of the grape harvest, ritual madness, ecstasy. Did I mention wine? And as you mentioned, we're always talking about brewing beer and the occasional mead and or cider. But you know, we mustn't forget about venting wine. After all, it too is Zymergy. And that includes, wine science, damn it. So let's grab a glass.
Where should I put this wine?
In our bodies.
I don't know how many people watch that show. Yes, John.
I was going to say, how many people actually watch Cougar Town?
Exactly. As you recognize, that is from Cougar Town, an apparently ill-named show because it has nothing to do with middle-aged women going after young'uns and trying to date them. It's a show created by Bill Lawrence, best known as the creator of the show Scrubs. But one thing they do a lot in Cougar Town is that they drink a lot of wine. They can't get enough of this stuff. Now, I, brewed plenty of beer, wine, beer, mead, cider, but I've only done a little bit of wine, and I suspect you've only brewed or made a little bit of wine yourself. So today we need to bring in some bigger guns who have more experience at this to make wine. And we're going to bring a gentleman in who's not from Cougar Town, but from Hogtown, Hogtown Ale Works, that is. let's bring him online. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Ron. Hello, John.
Now, Chris has been on our show before. He was on about a year ago, March 2014, and that was basically the homebrew store episode. Mm-hmm. Sound familiar, Chris?
Yes, demystifying the homebrew store for folks.
Okay. And as you're hanging out in that store, you're just brewing and making wine in the back room somewhere constantly.
Well, not on the premises, but it's interesting because a few years ago, some of us there decided that we should know a little bit more about the winemaking process. We didn't used to carry a lot of those products, and now we carry quite a few. And, we needed to increase our knowledge set, so about 2.5 years now, I've been making all kinds of different wines.
Yeah, and I've tried a few of Chris's wines, including your port, which was especially good, and I think you also specialized in some Merlots, or
The reds. I don't usually make the whites. Danny actually makes a few of the whites. So I like the red wines and the deeper flavors, and they're a little easier to make here in Florida. I'll tell you a little bit more about that later.
Okay. Well, let's just pull that trigger and get right into it. Tell us about wine, and certainly with this audience who's probably mostly been brewing beer, interested to know some of the differences of when you have to pound the grape.
All right. Well, the winemaking process versus the beer, that's probably the thing we'll talk about first. There are a lot of similarities, but one of the differences is there's no cooking necessary. So there is no kitchen or outdoor process whereby you're boiling for an hour, et cetera, et cetera.
No burners, no heat, no burns.
No burners, no. There is a way that you can sanitize fruit if you're going to use that, but I don't recommend that because usually what you're doing when you add heat to fruit and you boil, you make jam, not wine. Then you need some pectic enzyme to help you out. So we try to avoid that. We have other means for sanitizing.
So slushy wines, no good.
No, bad clarity. It's one thing to have some good legs in a glass of wine, but you don't want chunks.
Okay. So we're not making wine to go on our Wonder Bread.
No.
Okay. Just make sure.
So it does take a lot more time than beer does, and the other couple of differences really process-wise, you're not going to bottle condition your wine. So a secondary is very necessary. You don't want to have yeast in the bottle doing anything. You want a nice, clean, clear wine, and that takes time.
And I assume you don't want your corks popping off is another reason.
Certainly, and the wine bottles are not good at holding carbonation. So the good thing is the corks usually pop out. They don't explode, but it can happen, especially if you have them wired on the top. But as far as equipment goes, there are a lot of crossover between beer making and wine making. Of course, sanitizer, Starsan, a fan favorite, is good for use with both. And we, of course, believe rigorously in good sanitation. The fermenter that you'd normally use, you can use that with winemaking. I don't like the soft plastics with that, but any of the better bottle carboys and glass carboys are really good to use with winemaking. The hydrometer is the same. You're going to siphon it from one vessel to another exactly the same way, and you're going to use the same bottle wand. That's pretty much it. All those things you can use, you can cross over between your beer making and wine making. Now, when it comes to the equipment that's a little different, that's specialized for wine making, you're going to use a degasser to get the CO2 out of solution. You're going to have a corks and a corker, although you may use that for beer occasionally. You have your bottles, which are completely different, and then comes the mesh bag. Come on, ask me about the mesh bag.
Hey, Chris, you want me to ask you about your bag? Well, please tell me.
Well, now we come to the interesting thing. We have a couple of different kinds of wines you can make. The kit wines are very nice, very simple, easy for the beginner. But in Florida, we have this wonderful wealth of fresh fruits to choose from at different seasons of the year. And one of the most popular things for everyone to do, especially out in the countryside, is take fresh fruit and sugar and water and put it together to make country wines.
Sweet tea, country wines.
So that's the big two categories. I don't know. Which one do you want me to talk about first? Kit wines or country wines?
Well, I guess I would assume that if I'm a beginning winemaker, I would start with a kit wine. Would that be right?
You would assume that, although that doesn't seem to be the way that most people do when they come into the shop. However, we'll talk about the kit wines first. The nice thing about kit wines is if you are really trying to make a traditional grape wine, you can pick any variety of grape that you can think of. In white and red, and those come in, there are a few different types. I believe in the intro we had a little bit of the Chardonnay.
But we needed good Chardonnay.
A good Chardonnay. Well, in the whites, you have other grapes like Moscato, which tends to give you a sweet dessert wine. You have Sauvignon Blancs and Pinot Grigios, which tend to be dry and light-bodied. And then you have some things like a Riesling, which are usually a little sweeter, not always. Those are very interesting and light-bodied wines. They have a lot of character. They're a little tricky to make. The fun thing about that is if you're going to make them properly, and since most homebrewers do have some kind of temperature control, you usually would make those at the temperature you'd ferment an ale. So if you can do your beer, you can do your wine. Now, with the reds, you have I don't know if people are more familiar with reds than whites necessarily, but I know I am. You have your Shiraz, Zinfandel, Sangiovese, those sorts of deeper, full-bodied red wines that some people really like, and some people get a little scared by. They're a little too full of body. Cabernet Sauvignon's kind of on its own a little bit. And, you know, something like the beginner wines, which I believe, Ron, you participated in, which would be the Merlot or like a Malbec or Pinot Noir.
Yeah, it turned out fine.
Well, that's good.
Are you dissing Merlot?
No, not at all. But hey, I have a Pinot Noir right here in the studio that is 2 years old and has no sulfites in it. So it is it shows the shelf life of these wines when you make them. It's designed to be used with sulfites, and you can do that if you like, but a lot of people are allergic to it. Mm-hmm. If you drink red wine especially and you get a little stuffy or you have a little headache the next morning, sometimes that's due to the quantity you drink, but sometimes it's due to an allergy to the sulfites. About half the population has some degree of that. So you can choose to sulfite or not to sulfite your wine, which is pretty nice. Kit wines are easy. You go ahead and you sanitize a fermenter. You have basically, of the varietal juices I was talking about earlier, you have some slightly dehydrated juice. The more dehydrated it is, the cheaper the kit is because you have to add more water. Sort of think of it as a little more highly reconstituted. The more expensive kits are less reconstituted and more at full strength. Mm. And you put it in the fermenter, top it off with clean water. You can wave your hand over it a few times if it makes you feel better. And then you just put in a little bit of bentonite, which is in the kit. Pitch the yeast.
Hold on. Go ahead and explain what that was.
Bentonite. Bentonite is a clarifier. I hate to use the term kitty litter, but it is an active ingredient in kitty litter because it's absorbent. It's a clay. And you put that in stage one and followed by a good healthy yeast pitch of any of a variety of dried yeasts. You can choose liquid yeast strains if you want to, but it's not necessary. And then you let it ferment. And you basically leave it alone. It's the chia pet of fermentations.
So a little green fuzz grows on the exterior?
Well, hopefully not. Only if you put chia seeds on it.
Got it.
And how long for primary?
For primary, it would be nice to... Now, it's funny. The kits usually will tell you that they are a six-week wine kit. Now, that's supposed to be 6 weeks from start to finish. I always counsel that you go much longer than that. I like to see wines in the primary for 3 to 4 weeks. Usually if it's your first time out, you just like a first-time homebrewer, you're just staring at the thing waiting for it to be done. But you have to still give it a little bit of time. So about 3 weeks, 4 weeks out, and then rack it over into the secondary. And then the secondary you're talking about rather long-term. I like to leave it in there for a few months. I hardly ever bottle before my wine's like 4 or 5 months old or so. If you can, you know, once again, if you can distract yourself, let it sit there and forget about it, it won't bother you as much. And then you'll be surprised when it's bottling time. And not only that, but since bulk aging is better and more consistent than bottle aging in individual bottles, you are going to get a better, more consistent product at the end of the fermentation by having bulk aged it and gotten it nice and clear.
Now, your secondary fermenter, is that just another carboy or?
Precisely. Anything but a bucket. So don't go backwards into an oxygen permeable bucket or anything like that. So it goes from, you can have it, I like to have a dedicated bucket if you're going to bucket for the primary.
Okay.
But you go from a bucket or a better bottle or carboy into another better bottle or carboy. And, you know, once again, make sure you top off that sanitizer and let it sit. And then there are a couple of interesting things that you have to do to clarify. I think, Ron, you had mentioned something about that, wanting to know about clarification and also degassing and stabilization. So for clarification, usually time will do the trick. We do have a few things, and it's funny because it's a lot of the similar stuff that you'd use for clarifying homebrew. For instance, like a pack of Super Clear, which half of that's isinglass. You can use that. I mentioned bentonite earlier. You can use gelatin. You can use a lot of different things. But most of the time, if you're patient, time will do the job for you. As for degassing, degassing has a couple of important functions. If you've ever had a homemade bottle of wine and tried it and it was a little fermented in the bottle, you'll get a little bit of a kind of a dancing of the CO2 across your tongue, and it just feels weird. It's not fully carbonated, but it's not fully decarbonated either.
We call that petulant. Petulant. Not to be confused with petulant.
It also tends to enhance the acidity of the wine and make it a little harsh or sharp. So degassing helps get rid of that. And that's what those special tools are. We have degassing rods of a couple of different types. Some of the kits say use the end of your spoon, which most people are probably familiar with, the big plastic homebrewing spoon, and swirl it around for 5 minutes. That's not going to cut the mustard, unfortunately.
So we can use power tools in this endeavor, right?
Yes, we can use power tools, and I highly encourage it. So degassing is important, and then if you wish to stabilize it, because while you're degassing and you're using your power tools, you have to try not to introduce oxygen into the wine. Oxygen, much like later on in beer, is bad. It will stale the wine. So when you're doing that, try to avoid adding any oxygen. And one of the reasons why people do use Camden tablets or potassium metabisulfite to stabilize is because it inhibits oxygen action on the wine and keeps it shelf stable much longer.
Cool. Now, in the past, I don't know, 10 or 12 minutes you've been talking, you've been saying, you know, do this, be sure you don't do that. And just like a beginning homebrewer, when they hear instructions like that for the first time, this is what it sounds like.
Don't do anything that affects anything unless it turns out you were supposed to do it. In which case, for the love of God, don't not do it. Got it.
Yep, got it. Now, I'm going to hold you right there, Chris, because we're going to go into a brew tune break, but we will be back with some more wine knowledge. Right, Chris?
Absolutely.
All right. Listening to Homebrew Talk, and yes, in the Grow Radio studios.
You know, they say you can get 4 glasses of wine out of 1 bottle. I only get like 1.5.
Homebrew Talk.
Take all you got.
Shadows moving without a sound from the hold of the sleepless town. Evil seems to be everywhere. Heed the spirit that brought despair. Trouble's coming without control. No one's staying that's got a hope.
All right, welcome back to Homebrew Talk and our journey back to the 80s. So, Chris, have you figured out why we chose those particular songs?
No, unfortunately, I haven't. I was thinking about it, but I just couldn't get it.
Well, you know, I was a card-carrying mullet wearer in the 80s, and I used to, and Ron can verify that.
Picture.
Business in the front, party in the back. It was all about that, and so that was one of my faves from the 80s. Canadian band called April Wine. Why are they called April Wine, you ask? Well, they just thought that those two words sounded really good together.
White wine has less alcohol.
Ooh, thinking wine.
All right, Chris, we're going to roll on now with some more facts about making wine at home. And I was thinking over the break, when I started homebrewing many, many moons ago, I had The New Joy of Homebrewing, the Charlie Papazian's book, classic, really got me started. Is there a comparable book for winemaking, I wonder?
I wish there were. We have a couple of good books at the shop that are mostly about winemaking with grapes. Now, those are not the grapes that you find here in Florida. Those are not the muscadines.
Not muscadines, okay.
No, and unfortunately, it's difficult to acquire those in order to use those techniques, so the books are kind of limited in their helpfulness. We do a couple of times a year, well, one time a year, we are able to get in grapes from California, along with varietal juice at full strength. And people can use those if they wish to do that. But it's a limited thing. We only get to do it every once in a while just at the harvest time.
Got it. Cool. Well, maybe there's a book writing opportunity for you there, buddy.
That's still not my forte for wine. I mean, I'm okay at it, but I'm just a professional amateur. So
There you go. All right. All good.
So what are we going to talk about next?
Let's see. So we covered the kit wines. Now I want to move into some country wine.
Ah, country wine, everybody's favorite. If you've ever had someone break out the strawberry-flavored rocket fuel and give you a cup and tell you, hey, what do you think of my wine? Still, everyone sees that opportunity. You see those pallets of strawberries sitting there near the end of the season, and they're just a little mushy.
Sure.
Same thing with the blueberries. We have so many different fruits around here that you can make wine out of.
Right.
And it is fairly inexpensive to do so. So the alternative, and that was my mesh bag segue from the very beginning, the mesh bag is used when you go ahead and usually we'll have people get their wine bucket to ferment in. You put your mesh bag in it. You take a bunch of fruit, as much as possible, because the ratio of fruit to sugar is important. You want the fruit to be – you want to maximize the amount of fruit.
Okay.
Fruit, sugar, and water. Mix it all together. And then in order to inhibit any wild yeast that's on the fruit, you want to dose it with those Camden tablets, the potassium metabisulfite.
Okay.
Wait about a day and a half or so for that to dissipate because it's a yeast killer. Right. And doing that and then pitching your yeast into it is kind of counterproductive. And then you go ahead and you pitch your yeast in there along with a little, of course, always helpful yeast nutrient and energizer.
Okay.
And you let it ferment. And depending on the fruit, you let it ferment for a couple of days to about a week, maybe a little bit longer, and then use that mesh bag. It's a magic scoop. You pull that and you pull the pulp. Almost all of the heavy fruit parts that are in there, you get them out of your primary. Mm-hmm. And then you let it sit for a little bit longer and finish its fermentation in the primary. And then you treat it largely as you would a kit wine from that point out. Most of the time, the mistakes that people make is trying to go, we see people coming in with recipes. Well, it tells me I need to have 10 pounds of strawberries and 10 pounds of sugar. That goes back to that strawberry flavored rocket fuel I was talking about. That's exactly what you'll get. You're basically turning sugar into alcohol with no flavor, and you're flavoring it with a little bit of fruit. Mm. You want four or five or even six parts of fruit to every part sugar.
Okay.
If possible, especially with those lighter bodied fruits. Some people make some wine out of those rock hard sand pears that you find around.
Yeah.
Well,
uh-huh.
You know, once again, everyone's resourceful. They have found a way to make alcohol out of everything that has fermentable sugar in it.
Sure.
And that's.
Well, aren't those sand pears used for pears? Aren't those the type?
I believe you can use them for that. Yeah. Mm. So okay. Yeah, it's once again, it's perfectly perfectly fermentable. It's just they're not edible. That's the thing. So somebody figured out I can't eat them, but I could make a fermented beverage out of them.
Nice. Now with the sugars that you're using, you're just straight up table sugar is.
Table sugar is okay. The more fermentable, the better. Okay. So unless you're going to specifically flavor your wine with a sugar of some type, you want to use – basically, you want to use dextrose if possible.
Sure.
It's more – the crystals are smaller. It dissolves easier. You know, there's a whole lot of reasons why you can use that. It's fairly inexpensive as well.
Sure.
For most people, though, their table sugar is their go-to. They're going to have that around the house. If they're making small batches, that kind of thing, they're going to go ahead and do that. And you can make small batches of wine – in a much easier format than you can making small batches of beer with less effort.
Yeah.
You just don't get as many bottles. Same problem.
Got it.
So, let's see. What wine to make? So, we have muscadine, strawberries, blueberries, peaches, persimmons, pears, blackberries. I don't think we have a lot of... Do we have a lot of dandelions around here? I don't think so.
Dandelion wine. That was a choice for Brewtune break, but didn't go with it. No, I don't know that there's many dandelions to choose from.
Well, it is a little tricky because dandelion wine is made with the petals of the dandelion picked individually.
Dedication.
Usually a small amount of child slave labor is involved with groups of children. But yeah, I don't recall having had a lot of... I've heard a few people making that around here, but not many. Now, how about banana wine?
Whoa. Don't know what to think about that.
Or something a little more common. How about watermelon wine?
Okay.
Very popular. Everyone wants to make watermelon wine. Well, there are a few fruits that we have found to have proven problematic for people to make.
I would think you would need quite a bit of watermelon.
Well, you do.
Yeah.
But the problem isn't the watermelon itself.
Try and get those seeds out of your wine glass and cardboard.
So imagine that. Well, let's take banana wine first because we have had people come in and make banana wine. Bananas are a little starchy, so that can cause a problem by itself. I can't recall ever having had a really good banana wine that anyone has made. There's probably a reason for that. Watermelon wine is another thing all entirely. Everyone has them. They're another seasonal fruit. We have gobs of them when they come out. The one secret that we've discovered is when you put the pulp in the mesh bag, watermelon pulp you should get out of there about 48 hours after fermentation begins because it will rot.
Ooh.
And you will end up with really, really bad tasting wine. I think... Joe Simmons from Swamphead came in one time and talked to me about that because he had tried to do something with beer. And he described to me what he had done and how long he had left it in there. And I said, it rotted, didn't it? He said, yes, it did. So it's important to pull your fruit pulp out at the right time, depending on the fruit you're using.
Got it.
So what next?
Well, do you ever do anything with blending the wines that you make?
Actually...
Whether it's the just different, ages of the same wine or different wines?
That I haven't done, although I have blended some wine with one of my beers before. Put a Burgundy into a Belgian quad, and it comes off rather nice. So if you want to supplement your beer making with some of those stronger beers, it is not a bad idea. A
little fortification there. I like it. Very cool. Very cool.
When you when you were blending, did you, do a little sample cup and get the ratio right, and then do it to the entire maybe keg or?
No, honestly, I took a bottle of the wine. I had used experimentally, as I mentioned earlier, you can we have White Labs tubes of wine yeast, just like we have the beer yeast. Now we special order them because most people don't ask for them on a regular basis, but. What I did was essentially take the Burgundy wine kit and grow a nice starter of this Burgundy wine yeast, put it in there, and it failed to ferment out completely and finished at about a gravity of 20, which made a nice sort of semi-sweet red wine that wasn't what I was looking for, and I had quite a bit of it, so I needed to get inventive. Therefore, a finishing gravity of 20 wine went into a finishing gravity of 20 quad and worked out pretty nicely and neither dried it out nor sweetened it up any. It was very balanced.
Wow. Good thinking there. I like it.
Well, we're homebrewers. We have to make do with what we have.
That is what it's all about. I was curious, you know, I was asking about the secondary, the vessel that you used for the secondary earlier. Have you ever done any barrel aging, or have you ever tried? Do people, home vintners, do that sort of thing?
Since it's very hard to get a hold of barrels, that doesn't occur a whole lot. I think the club was trying to get a wine barrel that uses a Solera, and they were having a hard enough time just getting that. Although with the wines, you can age them in virgin oak barrels, and those are somewhat easier to find. I don't believe any of the folks that have been coming into the shop have mentioned doing that a whole lot. It's just less common. And it's funny, too, but it's not that the wine kits are in any way inferior, really, to true winemaking. But it's as if they're just not quite on the same level as the vintner in the same way that some homebrewers have taken their homebrewing to the professional level.
Mm. Okay.
Did you already mention putting wine cubes in the primary?
Wine cubes.
What the hell did I just say?
Wine cubes are fine on a summer afternoon if you're, you know, want to chill your wine. And it doesn't dilute it either.
And put a toothpick in it, too. It's delicious.
But of course.
Yeah, oak cubes.
As with beer, we have all the same stuff that you can put in there. We have French oak in cubes and chips. We have, you know, varying forms, spirals, and that sort of thing. And instead, you can't bring the wine to the barrel. You can bring the barrel to the wine. As a matter of fact, I have right now, I have some medium heavy French toasted oak, a spiral of that, sitting in a little bit of vodka just to be sanitary, and I'm going to throw it into a Zinfandel I have in the secondary at my house that came from our last crop of fresh California grape juices.
Nice.
So it helps age them in the you mock the barrel up just like you would with a beer.
Pretty cool. Well, that's good stuff. I think we are about time for another BrewTune break. You're listening to Homebrew Talk in the Grow Radio Studios.
Luckily, Stan spends a lot of time with the nanny while we get to pound grape. That's my new slang. I like it. You love it? No. Homebrew Talk.
them cats keep sipping that wine, drinking that beer that you shouldn't like. Then you start fussing and fighting all night. Drink the wine, buddy, oh, drink the wine. Wine, buddy, oh, drink the wine. Wine, buddy, oh, drink the wine. Pass that bottle to me. Let's get together and buy some wine. Some by the pills and some by the pint. When you buy a sherry, you're doing things right. Drink the wine, buddy, old drink the wine. Wine, buddy, old drink the wine. Wine, buddy, old drink the wine. Pass that bottle to me. Wine, wine, wine. Wine, wine. Together and buy a little wine. Some by the bill, some by the pint. When you buy the sherry, you're doing things right. Drink your wine, buddy, old drink the wine. Wine, buddy, old drink the wine. Wine, buddy, old drink the wine. There's that bottle of me.
Welcome back to Homebrew Talk, and I'm going to say that during that tune break, I got a faint flashback to Amazon Women on the Moon.
Where did that come from? Explain.
Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure, sure. Well, you know, he was a good friend of mine.
Yes.
And my mighty good friend, Chris back here, served up some mighty fine wine, just as Jeremiah did in that brew tune break. That's Three Dog Night off of their classic album, Naturally. And then we had a New Orleans classic, Drinking Wine, Spodeody by somebody. Jerry Lee Lewis did it. That wasn't quite the rendition just then, but you get the picture.
Just when I think you've said the stupidest thing ever, you keep talking.
Wine cubes. So once again, that would be my cue.
That is the best soundbite we have, by the way.
Yeah, always seem to play that at that third segment. Hey, so to measure, you know, alcohol and beer and wine. And usually you have to use the original gravity and ferment and final gravity, do a little math or plug it into some software and you find out how much alcohol is in it. But there's another option with wine, the vinometer. We got other words for that thing, don't we, Chris?
Yes, we get that from two different places, and it's a vinometer or a vino-o-meter, as is printed on one of the interesting boxes that apparently you have.
Right. Yeah, if you say it just like it's written. So the procedure, it's fairly straightforward. I'm just going to call it a vinometer because that's how I like to call it. It's not that expensive, is it? How much? How much do these go for?
Oh, it's $6 or $7.
All right, cheap. So you get one and make sure it's clean and dry, and you fill it up halfway with the wine. Then it basically looks like how do you want to describe it? It's like almost like it's made of glass. It's got like a tiny miniature cup at the top and a funnel or stem underneath it, right?
Yes, it's almost like the stem of it is about the width of the inside tube of a thermometer.
Yeah.
And it sort of works on that same principle where you have liquid kind of creeping down a very thin tube.
Yeah. Right. So you had it filled up halfway, then you let, at least with the version I have, you let 6 drops drip from the funnel so that it's all filled up with liquid. Then you turn it upside down, and then wine will descend back down the tube until it stops. And at that point, you read the alcohol measurement. Right?
That's how it works. And as long as you don't have any sediment or anything else in there that's interfering with its operation, it's a pretty interesting and easy way to get the alcohol content of your wine.
Yeah, besides not having any sediment, you probably can't have carbonation, I assume, too.
To that would also interfere.
Right. So if you're going to do that on beer, you got to flatten that guy out. So I tried this on...
You got your wine degasser.
Yes. So I tried this on a commercial bottles, you know, where the alcohol is known, it's on the label, and I tried it, and just about every time, I'll be damned, it was accurate. They agreed, and it's like two thermometers. You get you feel great when they agree, viciously agree.
Hey, that's the best thing, and it's an inexpensive and simple tool. That's one of those things makes, you know, winemaking can be really simple, and you don't have to measure it if you don't want to.
Yeah. So this could be used mead and cider, and hey, try it on your beer for the hell of it. Get rid of the bubbles, though. So, hey, John, what's brewing?
Well, it's springtime here in Florida, and our legislative session is just around the corner, so I figured I'd give us a little bit of a legislative update. Now, for those of you listening across the planet may not know that in Florida here, we cannot serve a 64-ounce growler, which is really kind of silly. I believe there's 48 other states in which you can do the 64-ounce growler. Florida, unfortunately, not one of those. And that's really the standard everywhere out there. We can do a quart. We can do 32 ounces. We can do 128 ounces, which is a gallon. And how much beer does that run?
It's an awful lot.
That's an awful lot of beer. Some guy said that on TV20 around here. I don't know who. But anyways, so this has been a stumbling block there for quite some time, and the craft breweries, of course, are very much in favor of that. We'll get folks that come in, and they're from other states, North Carolina. We get a lot of people from North Carolina in there, and they plop their 64-ounce growlers up on the bar top, and we explain very politely, well, our stays a little bit backwards. We can't legally fill that. So it's looking like, possibly, that may come to pass that we can actually fill those legally, which would be great. But, you know, there has been something brewing here. There's been a recent lawsuit that was brought, and, you know, when I heard about it, I could only think one thing. So this was brought. This was not legislation. This was actually a lawsuit that was brought by the Retail Federation and the FISA. It was an administrative lawsuit against the Division of Alcohol, Beverage, and Tobacco. And these are the folks that grant licenses to breweries to operate tasting rooms. And the genesis of that was way back in the 70s when a little tiny beer maker known as Anheuser-Busch had a theme park here in Florida, still does. Actually, they don't own it anymore. But Busch Gardens down in Tampa, they had a brewery there at one point, and they wanted to be able to serve to the public. So there was an exception in the law that allowed breweries to allow folks to taste their product as long as they were promoting tourism. Well, it was pretty easy to see that, you know, Busch Gardens, major theme park. They were promoting tourism. So the Retail Federation, the FISA, said shenanigans, and they wanted a clarification of the rules because we were issued licenses with no real requirement to prove that we were promoting tourism. Well, I think that's all pretty silly because especially if you go to a place like Cigar City, You can find tourists in there on a daily basis. We get plenty of visitors from out of town, out of state, even out of the country, sometimes at first magnitude. So I think it's pretty obvious that we do really promote tourism. But the good news is, Cracker Jack timely reporting, that suit was just dropped 2 days ago. So at least we don't have to worry about that. But again, the legislative session being right around the corner, there is a House Bill number 107 that was sponsored by Representative Greg Stube out of Sarasota that will potentially legalize the 64-ounce growlers, which is great. But it's got a bunch of other stuff in there as well, including options for limited self-distribution for breweries that are operating, I believe it's under 5,000 barrels, which I think is a great idea, but I think the big guys are really going to dig their heels in at that. So here's my editorial piece. Could we just have a simple growler bill and legalize the 64-ounce growler and be done with it? The Beer Wholesalers Association, which is a professional association of the big distributors, has come out on record and said that they're not going to argue against this. So could we just have a simple bill, please, and get the silly law behind us? So if you enjoy your local craft brewery and enjoy taking a growler home, contact your representatives and please let them know what you think about it. And let's get this thing passed and taken care of. So, with that, I do have to give a shout out to one of our great local breweries here, Intuition, in Jacksonville. In a response to that lawsuit, they're getting ready to relocate. They're going to downtown Jacksonville near the Jaguar Stadium and building a great new facility. And they put out a photo, and I'm sure you can search this online, for Intuition Ale World, complete with roller coasters, and it's really pretty awesome. So just to show that they really are going to promote tourism there. So do a search, image search on Intuition Ale World. It's definitely worth it. So with that, we say support your local breweries and your local craft beer bars, and when Chris is in the studio or not, support your local homebrew store.
Exactly. And on that note, Chris, thanks for coming in, talking shop with wine.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right. Come back anytime. All right. The bottle's now empty here at Homebrew Talk. We'll be back next month. But if you can't wait, you can always check out our past podcast at homebrewjockey.com.